for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and this podcast is one of a short series we are doing exploring the role of CISO and its relationship with governance. This builds on the governance report we released last year and is a small part of some work we are going to do in 2023 on what being a CISO involves these days, how it's changing, what good leadership looks like, the types of responsibilities, roles a CISO has to take on. To help discuss these topics, I have a very distinguished couple of guests. Paul Watts, who actually in his title, he's a distinguished analyst at the ISF who spent many years as a CISO. Hello, Paul.
And I've still got all my hair. Oh, hang on. No, I don't. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. Also here is Lise Aldalista, who is cybersecurity lead, head of governance at Danone, who reports to the CISO at that company and has spent many years in the security field and is definitely distinguished.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. And I'm very glad to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Yeah, because you were a great interviewee for the report, got lots of good guidance and help from you. But just to, start things off just by exploring that report a bit. It was frustrating and fun to do because governance is practiced in many different ways across almost every organization, though we did boil it down into some common core components that pretty much everybody makes part of the governance program. They have to know about their organizational context. They have to have a good sense of their information security arrangements. They need a strategy governing the whole thing. Policies, procedures, controls have to be there. You need a good way to make sure that those things are doing what they should. Key to their senior management support, definitely need to have that. And awareness and behavior is the types of things that you're trying to spread across the organization. But what struck me was while I was doing that was quite a lot of the people I talked to had built up that experience through war stories and bad experiences, often good experiences too. But I just wonder, is that the only way to do this? And the only way to become good at governance is to, you know, build up some scars, go through some changes and suffer a bit?
Well,
I mean, Paul, you say you're losing all your hair. Is that part of the job?
I think you're right that as a topic, we are now starting to acknowledge that this is a topic that you probably need to learn about as a CISO, right? And I think that is part of why to date, I think it's mostly about building experience and, you know, getting understanding of what makes a company tick, company strategy. You need to have a good understanding of its culture. So the common denominators, I think we are only just about uncovering in this rather young area of the cybersecurity field of work, right? And I'm very happy that it's now acknowledged and more acknowledged, even so much so, I mean, I am teaching in it. So that means that we can learn, maybe a lot younger or unexperienced CISOs, to maybe learn from the things that we've learned probably the hard way. I still have some hair, but I guess that's what we are trying to help maybe also more or less experienced CISOs. So.
Yeah. Because I guess so the SOGB has some sections on governance, but it's very high level. I know there's common bodies of knowledge as well. If you're doing a qualification, you'll find out a bit about this. But to be honest, I'm not sure how much use they are, Paul. I don't know, for you, when you were as a fledgling CISO, when you had hair, you know, flowing locks and everything, was that sort of, do you look at that and think, well, that's no good at all? And then you had to go and build up those scars and have those experiences.
I think a lot of the hair loss, to be fair, is probably a product of being a father of two. So I'll just put that out there as well. But I can attribute some of it to, you know, learning how to be an effective security leader. And that knowledge needs to blend with experience. So it's all well and good picking up the standard of good practice for information security and reading, you know, what governance needs to be in terms of process and outcome. Then go and try and do it. And then you realize that there are soft skills and experiences that you need to learn to become fully effective in role. I talk about the kind of governance journey in an organization in the context of to, for, and with, you know. So if you're doing governance to an organization, that's very one directional. That's, you know, that's imposing regulations and statute. And, you know, that's not what I would consider good governance in a digital company circa 2023. If you're doing it for there's a demand for your services. So that's a step in the right direction. When you're doing it with the business, shared collaboratively, that's when you have that secret sauce. But as I'm sure we'll go on to talk, you know, the tools and skills and techniques in order for that to work well are born from experience, a blend of technical skills, knowledge of, you know, the domain of security. But how that applies to your business, if you don't know that, you're lost.
Yeah, yeah, I think there is that sort of, you're not going to be able to do this from day one, are you? And definitely most of the people I talked to for the report were quite senior and had been doing it for quite a while and talked in terms of their plans being played out over months and years. I don't know if that's your experience, Lise, that this stuff does not happen quickly either. It's just, you know, you do need to see things happen.
Absolutely. And there are some key elements there that I can highlight, right? So it's about, indeed, when are you able to do it to actually align? This is one of those theory book lines, right? Align your cybersecurity strategy with the business strategy. One sentence where is a wealth and a world of difficulty behind it, because actually the core of that, we tend to understand it as defining a very good cyber strategy, but that's what is a good cyber strategy is indeed understanding the business. And you have to really understand business models, business case, like, you know, what actually makes the company tick to find that right cybersecurity narrative. And it's one of my favorites is understanding that mechanism and how that then fits into your strategy and into your governance model, i.e. what does the company need? Because it differs greatly in different companies. And I have had some exposure to very differing types of companies as well, right? And I think you will get better understanding if you've been exposed to different business models, business services, right? I'm now in food manufacturing. You can understand that that is very different than, for example, operating trains or being in a financial sector, right? So very different types of businesses require different governing models as well. Because on top of it, and this is the second element, you need to also understand the culture of a company. And I know that is also a well-documented, but I think ill-understood topic. And they sit very far outside of the realm of, you know, our cybersecurity field of work that we normally see as part of what we need to understand. So I think this is the difficulty in this topic and being unexperienced.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, to align your strategy to the business strategy. Yeah, it sounds, well, that's easy then, isn't it? If it's one line, surely no more detail is needed than that. But yeah, I think that was some of the stories that, and that was, I think that was the harder part as well. It's just that some of the people I talked to on governance were doing the right thing, but not the right thing for their organization because they didn't understand the culture of the organization or how it worked or what its priorities were. And they were sort of, that's why they were, to your phrase, Paul, doing it to the organization, certainly not for, and certainly not with. So I think that's the knowing your organization. And again, that's not going to happen overnight. I mean, there's definitely some.
I mean, I can't stress how important it is to strike an empathetic chord with your organization. And again, just, you know, building on experience, you know, when I was a little bit more green guild working in financial services, you know, I'd drop a policy and I'd say the screensaver timeout is going to be 10 minutes. That's not negotiable. I'm telling you, it's going to be 10 minutes. And then I remember when I was the CISO at Network Rail, standing on a high speed rail line at 3 o'clock with a controller of site safety, or he was the individual in charge of possession, who was telling me how ridiculous a short timeout was on their iPad when they were under extreme pressure to hand the railway back at 5 a.m. so that passengers could travel on time. And you then, and so on and so forth. And you then start to recognize the ramifications of your policies in the context of the business. You kind of have to put the business first, strike that empathetic tone, be curious and understand what it is the business is trying to do. If you don't do that, you will never transition from two to four to with. You just won't. So you know, that curious nature and understanding of the business is absolutely critical if you want governance to work and work well.
Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, it does, it's I guess incumbent on the CISO or security lead, governance lead, call them what they will, or whoever's responsible for it, to go out and find out that as well. I mean, you can't chances are you're going to have to walk some corridors, knock some doors, talk to a lot of people. I think that's the other side of this as well. It's a very personal, with a small p, job as well. I think Lise, you sort of, I know you talked about that. We've talked about that before, just how much contact you need with the rest of the organization.
Very fair. So that's the leadership skills and building the bridges. Because I think one other misunderstood element is that it is also about the understanding of cybersecurity by the leaders who you are trying to explain what type of cybersecurity organization your company needs. And it's I always like to compare it with sort of simple storytelling, where if you try, and very often you try and teach a child how to cycle a bike, which of course is a very Dutch example, you can't blame me for it. You have to, and very often in a company, right, the board will understand that they need to do something, but it's a very, very, you know, new area for many of them. And it's about technology, digitization, and it's about risk, which are two elements that need to be kind of joined up together and need to be understood well, not by me, but you need to educate these organizations in at the same time as trying to define this governance, which is the challenge, because very often our audiences are like the child who's trying to learn to ride a bike. They don't understand the context of all the traffic rules, or that the e-bike is now going 70 miles an hour, right? And we want to get them to cross the road and make decisions if they can cross that road safely or not, that they should take a zebra crossing, that they have to look left, right, left, or the other way around in England. But, you know, and it's actually that kind of a journey of bringing that educational piece also to board members in a language they can understand, so that they can understand your advice in determining the risky decisions. So it's a bit tricky. And this is where you will see that you as a CISO, first of all, will influence and tell them from your expert view what you think is right. And then as you are maturing through that journey, hopefully, you know, they will be able more and more to take those decisions themselves. So that is a bit the thinking that is also an explanation why it takes a long time to build and see an effect of building the right governance. And it tends to go through iterations, right, as well, when we are building these capabilities.
Yeah. And just, I mean, to build on that, just, I had an interesting experience. I've got twin boys and teaching them to drive a car. Yeah. And what has been very interesting is that, you know, because governance is a bit like the highway code. I don't know what the Dutch equivalent of that is, but just the rules of the road. And interesting, one of them, once they got to know the rules of the road, became a very cautious driver. And the other, knowing the rules of the road, became a very dangerous driver. And I think both ways of behaving are tolerated by those rules. They're keeping to the rules, but they have a very different way of approaching the problem. And I think that's the other side of governance, isn't it? You know, you're setting people up, setting the organization up, and then perhaps it can handle risks it wouldn't otherwise do. And I think that's the good, we try to explore a bit of that in the report. The governance does good things for you. It's not just for the sake of it.
It should work for, indeed, you know, the behavioral change is exactly what you're alluding to, that you are trying to instill in the organization, indeed.
Yeah.
But I think the important point to add there, Mark, to you know, to build on that anecdote, is what you did is you empowered both of your children to make an informed decision. So they understood the context, the situation they placed themselves in. They understood the rules, the desired outcome. They then recognized that they were influential in the application of controls to either apply or not apply that rigor and those rules. They made an informed decision. They chose to behave in the way they chose to behave. And your role was to kind of broker both sides of that coin so that they could make informed decisions. That feels very similar to what we try to do with good security governance. It's enabling our business to make effective decisions with context, aligned to the desired outcomes of the organization. Kind of comes back to the whole adage of, you know, if you think all risk is bad, you're mismanaging risk. Actually, mismanaged risk is the problem. The business needs to decide how little or how much risk it is prepared to take at any point in time. And it's our role to kind of govern, oversee, and keep that alignment in check. But as CISOs, we have to recognize that it's our job to help them make those informed decisions, not tell them what they cannot do, the office of no, as we used to be called. I think we've moved away from that now.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly was a case with my kids. I mean, you step back and you're worried, but you can see them doing these kind of things. But if they are obeying the rules of the road and not getting themselves into trouble and handling, I say handling those risks, then you have to sort of accept that you've done a lot of the right kinds of things.
But
I mean, that's part
this—it's—I
of the point as well.
think it's about setting that risk tolerance level, right? So your children have very different risk appetite or tolerance for when they are driving, and this is, of course, also what we see in talking to different leaders. The perception of risk and what is perceived to be risky. I think it's our job to try and take out some of the fuzz. And some of the, but it's always somewhat arbitrary, I think, of how you gauge the risk for an organization, even for us. And we can advise, and it depends on the voice that we have. I think we tend to have a very, once established properly, there's definitely not a voice that can be ignored. But it's important that you get there.
I think a good indicator of how mature that governance is the whole kind of adage of if you break your leg, don't come running to me. And what I mean by that is if that decision then doesn't play out in the way that the business had hoped, there shouldn't be a blame rippling back to the C-suite to go, ah, well, that's the wrong decision. It's all your fault. You need to share in the outcome, good or bad. And then this starts to lean into what Lee, you were talking about earlier in terms of the principles of fail fast. Shared accountability. All these cultural nuances underpin and support effective corporate and security governance. Those relationships need to be trustworthy, open, transparent in order for this to work. If every time you kind of support the business in making a decision and that decision goes wrong, you feel like you've got a target on your back, that to me doesn't feel like an effective relationship that underpins good, effective, strong, robust governance.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of the another key aspect that emerged during the interviews in the report was that, yeah, it's the information security shouldn't be the fall guy for everything that goes wrong. And there's quite a few examples where strategies were being played out and didn't quite strategies in the large organization, not the information security function. And the finger of blame did sort of swing around towards the InfoSec, and they were like, well, hang on. And it was making sure that those other departments take on that risk and accept what they're doing is their, not entirely their fault, but they if it's going to be signed off, if they don't accept those risks, then there needs to be escalation and there needs to be a debate about how that happens and who does what. And that was quite a mature step, but a difficult one for a lot of organizations, because sometimes in a lot of organizations, InfoSec are the ones, are the fall guys.
So agreeing, right, on this model of who is risk owner and is the ultimately accountable party for deciding how to treat the risk, I think is pivotal for any start of any conversation about how do we set up our organizational model to manage this risk. Because the CISO can own it, he can be part of that first line. If it's very immature, you very often step in there to help them. Because back to that example, your kids were not able to take that responsibility from day one to make the right to when they are learning to drive a car. You can't tell them, oh, but when we have an accident, it's your fault, right? You pay the bills. I bet you made some kind of an agreement like, okay, we'll take that risk and but I will take the ownership of that risk. When something goes wrong, I will pay. You knowingly went in there. It's very similar, right? I think when you join in an organization where this maturity is met, but of course, then the CISO needs to really make sure that that is well understood, that you may be stepping in or not. And another element is there's never a status quo, right? We are talking about driving capabilities. So the capability to be able to drive and to understand all the laws and regulations, right, or to do the cybersecurity field. It's a very complicated field with numerous capabilities, all of which you need to kind of tie down, who has a say in what, who is risk owning this piece of the puzzle, who and where are we building up the capability? Because you were talking about the knowledge. Right. That knowledge needs to, in my view, also be transferred into an organization, or you can build a very heavy CISO office as well, right? And those are organizational elements you need to decide upon, and you make it very explicit to in your models to make sure that you have the best governance fitting the organizational goals.
Yeah, I think that came out certainly in the research that, yeah, it's hard to, one size is not going to fit all, and because there's lots of different sizes, you definitely need to take account of that.
Can I just add something to that, actually? I think, Lise, you just tripped on a really interesting point there. Can we just talk a little bit about operating models? So the traditional office of the CISO, that kind of center-led way of discharging security, accountabilities, responsibilities, controls, I think that model's run its course, if I'm honest with you. Do we think that the differences in operating models can drive the efficacy of security governance? So, for example, you know, I've worked in multinationals as group CISO, and it's very hard to see what's going on right across the organization at skip level. So the idea of having a center-led office at the CISO, you can't see everything that's going on. So that immediately starts to give you some short-sightedness in terms of, you know, what's actually happening within the organization. So we now start to see the rise of the business information security officer, that kind of evolution from security champion. So the business is kind of driving that material with a security slant into a focal point. To me, that is an obvious evolution of security leadership, underpinning and supporting and nurturing collaborative and effective security governance. First of all, you know, in the context of Danone, are you playing with changes in operating models, and are you seeing any benefits from that? And I guess then the question for you, Mark, is did that come out of the research into security governance? And this is something that I think, or is this something I think we should focus on a little bit more? Spoiler alert, that's exactly what I'm going to be doing later in the year. But I'm really curious to hear both your perspectives on that.
Maybe on the models, I maybe don't agree fully with you that it's so black and white, that it's either or, you know, heavy central model, and that is dying down. I actually do feel that there are businesses out there, and look in the financial sector, where it's very much common to have the CISO own numerous capabilities that support their business case. So in the banks, doing, for example, lots of access control and actually pulling that as a capability very close to the CISO office or owned by the CISO office, it can be quite effective, because the hard way to build that capability in numerous other teams, I think, is much, much proven also to be extremely hard, because it's a very expert level knowledge set, skill set, that is also very hard to get in the marketplace. So it could also be a very efficient model to build it centrally and to serve an organization. It's just different. And I don't think we can be as black as white and saying, oh, we can now see. I think it very much depends. If cybersecurity is at the heart of your business model, like it is, for example, in a bank, right? Lots of money can be lost. Then I think it makes sense, because the harder way in building and educating an organization and getting the skills in the business operations or processes may be much harder and even more costly. So it's about building the right costing model. And I agree that there is, of course, depending on the size of a company, a development in more business-oriented information security officer roles. And I think that has to do with driving a better strategy aligned to businesses more than anything else, which is that requirement aligned to the business strategy. And having these guys, that will bring that knowledge of that business back to maybe a more centrally oriented team.
I certainly did see a couple of different models of governance in among the people I talked to. There was one really interesting one, which was the governance unit was a small bubble, really, of about four or five people that sat apart from everybody, and was because they could see in the future that it wouldn't just be information security governance they'd be worried about. It would be a much broader thing as well. And that there was and part of the reason I did adopted that was because they've been through a big merger, two large financial organizations, had a lot of governance efforts, and realized none of it was really working very well after the merger, and they needed to do something quite shocking and different. So, and that, you know, carving it out, letting it float free, and put it, you know, turn its gaze to many different parts of the organization was the only way they were really going to make it work, because there was a lot of governance to do, but they didn't want to have replicate those governance functions across, you know, again and again and again. So we saw that, and definitely the BISO, there was a few places doing that. But it wasn't. I guess it's not clear to me quite yet what defines that, but it might be to do with culture, and it might be to do with the nature of the organization itself. That if there's a lot of cybersecurity going on there, or information security, or a lot of regulation, then perhaps it is held closer to the center. But also, I think at one point, in that maturity of an information security function, it changes, and it could be the case that the CISO is part of the IT department and then becomes independent. And then where do you go? If you're standing by yourself, are you? Who's your paymasters? Who do you report to? And that can be an interesting and difficult negotiation, relationship, etc., path to go down. Might be quite necessary because suddenly a lot of people. I think you said this, Lise, when we talked, that sometimes the people beyond IT are asking you to do all kinds of good things, and IT are going, "Well, I'm not paying for it." And then suddenly you've got questions about where that revenue is going to come from and who you're answering to. So I think circumstance can change these things, but it's fascinating to look into.
But this is where it's important to make the distinction. I think it's important to recognize that there's a difference between control application and alignment to business strategy. So, back to Lee's point, I don't disagree with the adage that consolidating IDAM to a focal point that drives economies of scale. I think in terms of the breadth of knowledge and understanding that you see, I think that's very, very important. But when you think about the application of control in the context of business objectives, especially if the organization is conglomerate, multi-divisional, fragmented, you need an understanding of the impact of what that central control looks like at a localized context. And I think sometimes it's very difficult to get that reflection back if you don't have that voice or those eyes at that business level. I think just to kind of boil that down, I totally agree. One size doesn't fit all, but I do worry that as cybersecurity is broadening across business, people, process, and technology to be a lot more than just the application of technical controls, that we are maybe starting to lose some of that business context. And I think that kind of plays a little bit going into a slightly different topic here, is where a large swathe of CISOs come from a technical background. And I think as we're now starting to see that acceptance of security and technology and business strategy kind of coming together, do we drive some blind spots? Actually, I encourage people to be leaning into their businesses and getting that reflection back, because I think that helps eliminate what that blind spot is. And it allows us to bring our body of knowledge to their business experience. And then that collaboration drives some fantastic outcomes. Comes back to the basic principles that individuals like Simon Sinek talk about. When you have a conversation, you need to start with the why and then work backwards into that, rather than just telling them you're going to impose a control. That only can really be nurtured out through effective communications. And I think, Liz, as you said, and I think the research bore out, Mark, it's a very, very iterative process. This is not a linear journey in terms of building security governance maturity in an organization. You have
Yeah,
to work at it.
governance is definitely one of those plans that does not survive contact
It
with
builds over
reality.
time as a business change.
It regularly gets knocked back to where it was months ago, and you have to start again. It's like playing a really bad computer game. You can build up your towers, and then suddenly they get overrun and all kinds of things. And it's definitely a keep on going. But just a final question, as I'm conscious of time, was that just to do with, and I know something this is something you've mentioned as well, Paul, to do with the average tenure of a CISO is going to be sort of a couple of years, maybe three. But so, I mean, I guess for governance, then, if your plans are going to play out over many years, what you're trying to do is establish a legacy. In some respects, governance is about making sure the organization does the right thing, and it doesn't depend on just you being there and rallying the troops. And that aspect of it, I think, is maybe we didn't play that quite up as play that up quite as much in the report as we should. But I think for the long term with governance, for sure.
It's an interesting point, isn't it? So the average tenure of a CISO, and there are outliers, it kind of sits around the 18, 36 months. Your business strategies are going to outlive that. Now, the reasoning behind why that tenure is as low as statistics tell us is a completely different conversation. But it really does speak volumes as to why it's so important for your security governance to be shared, collaborative, because you need that to outlast, outgun. If you're constantly having to reset the way that you govern and orchestrate security every time you change your CISO, and if that's every 2 to 3 years, it's no wonder that we don't have that sustainability, because we never finish what we started. Now, I recognize that businesses are very agile, you know, very diverse, very different. You know, strategies are completely changing. You know, the last 2 or 3 years has shown us how little control we actually have over our destinies. But to have that, to have that sustainability in embedding security as a cornerstone of good, sound, risk-balanced outcomes, it has to be something that's shared. It has to be something that's collaborative. Otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere fast. You're going to be stuck in those lower levels of maturity. You know, every CISO is a different personality, just like every CIO, every CEO. You know, you want to put your mark on something, but really you should be building on something over time.
Yes, but I think though on all the responsibilities that CISOs already have, are we now also having to have creating legacies? I think maybe we are stretching it a little bit. I think what can be helpful for the longevity of your operating model is to design some good and sound design principles that you apply that can be picked up and that will maintain for a longer period of time, because you know the time is past that we will have strategies for 5 years, even businesses strategies. You know, we don't do it anymore. Pandemics have indeed proven that to be futile. So we do need to really be more agile, and having some sound principles, i.e. where do we feel that we build our capabilities, right? Do we apply 3 lines of defense? That is very sensible to do, to have that organizational discussion going and get some of these principles signed off, and then work towards, you know, defining the organization around it. But these things change because of maturity, and some companies go much faster than others. So it's also the speed of change, the speed of adoption of what you're building will determine the speed at which you will then leave, I don't know, any legacy. But these principles can then be picked up on, and by or the next CISO who will pick up the role can probably, you know, reiterate and see if it's still fit for purpose. And I think there is nothing more to it than defining these 3-5 sound and solid principles that then can be translated in the operating model. And I think a call upon us, all of us, is we have to take this in an agile way as well, right? It's not, the target operating model that you write 1 year before is probably also in parts outdating as you speak. So organizations change. We have to live with that. Be the business person to move with it, right? That is back to that first point. You have to be in tune with that business strategy and change with it.
So then, yeah, the organization changes as well. It is, it's a constant work in progress. Yeah, I'm very conscious of time, so unfortunately I have to close it there. I'm sure we could talk for a lot longer. Thanks you both for helping me with this, a fascinating discussion, and thanks to everybody for listening. You can find more podcasts on the ISF podcast channel at securityforum.org, and as well we're now on most podcast subscription platforms as well. Please look for us on there. There's also much more about ISF research tools and guidance on ISF Live.